Hello and welcome to the podcast for the Organisational Behaviour Textbook. I'm Scott Lawley.
And I'm Daniel King.
And we're the authors of the Organisational Behaviour Textbook. And in these podcasts, we're going to look in a bit more depth at some issues relating to what we cover in the chapters of the book. And we're going to look at a few other news articles that relate to that.
So, Scott, what is it that you've been looking at today then?
Well, I've got an article here. Which is about recruitment and selection, which we look at in the personality chapter. And in that chapter, we talk about how artificial intelligence is doing more and more functions of recruitment and selection. And we're used to the idea that if you have 1,000 applications, then you can use artificial intelligence to sift through those and to, you know, screen out the applications that are going to be unsuitable. And we know that personality tests are used as a way of you know, quite efficiently screening out people who don't have the right personality that you want for a job. But this report is actually saying that even interviews are now being automated by doing video interviews. So what we've got here is if you're going for a job, you basically get sent a link. And you sit in front of your computer, in front of the webcam, and these questions pop up. You get about a minute or 2 minutes to think about your answer, and then you actually speak your answer into the camera. So whereas a traditional interview, you know, you would be sat in front of people in the same room, and you'd be speaking directly to them, here you don't actually see anyone. You're just speaking into a webcam.
Why is it companies are doing this then?
Well, I mean, I imagine for the same reason they do personality tests, and for the same reason that they use other sort of automated ways of screening candidates. Jobs can get an awful lot of candidates, and there just isn't the time to interview all of them. And to sit down with them, or perhaps you don't have the money to pay the expenses to bring them into for interview or whatever. So it's really a sort of an efficiency.
But is somebody sitting and watching every single interview that's done then after they get uploaded?
Not necessarily. This is where the artificial intelligence comes in, because obviously they can. A computer can transcribe what people have said. It can pick out keywords in the answers. It can even track the eye movements or the facial expressions that people make. So, I mean, what you see in this particular article that I'm looking at is someone actually being coached into how to do these interviews and where to look and how to present yourself, even what background to have. It says on this one, having a plain white background is best, and certainly not to be sat in your kitchen with all the washing up piled up or something like that. So, yeah, the artificial intelligence is picking up on these sorts of things.
So people are trying to game the system a bit then, aren't they?
Yeah, and I mean, what comes out in this article is that people don't really like doing these interviews. It just doesn't feel natural to be staring basically at a webcam, staring at a screen and giving these bite-sized answers. You know, you're used to sort of being in the same room as people when you do something like this. So the figures on this is that this was a BBC study in the UK, and it says half of employers, that's a big number, half of employers are using these interviews by video. But that almost that number, 45% of staff are not keen on giving that type of interview. They don't like doing interviews that way. And whether that's because it feels unnatural or whether it's because there's not a human who's making the decisions about you, these are all things that, you know, have been said about personality tests as well. And 91% of interviewees actually said they feel face-to-face is better.
But it also says something about communication, because it's really hard just to talk and there's nobody there listening to you and interacting with you. So It's very hard to get that type of dynamic sense. But also, are they a good way of fitting somebody to a job? Because your ability to be able to sit in front of a webcam and answer a question in 2 minutes, does that mean that you'll be good at doing the job?
Well, I think, you know, that brings two things to mind. It does link with a lot of these issues around sort of automated recruitment that we look at in the personality chapter. And as with personality tests, do they really give a measure of your personality, or do they actually show how well you've been coached to give the right answer? Yeah, so yeah, is this really measuring how well you can do the job? But I guess what you're getting is, as much as the person who's doing the interview feels uncomfortable, by not being in the same room as the person you are interviewing, so from an employer's perspective, are you really getting the full rounded picture of what that person is like in the way that you might get if you were in a room doing a face-to-face interview? So I think you're absolutely right to pick out wider issues of communication here, because it's not just in job interviews that technology is used to facilitate communication. And whilst these interviews are automated and they're not done with an actual person, it's now commonplace that a lot of work is done through speaking to someone over Skype or some sort of video conferencing, or even you may not see the people and you're collaborating using some sort of software that brings you together to do the work. And when you look at the chapter on perception and communication, I think what really comes to mind here is something called social presence theory. And that is the degree to which you really get the same sense of communication through technology. You know, if you're having a face-to-face conversation with them, is it really the same if you're doing it over video conferencing?
Which is funny. Yeah. If you go into like a big major city like London, you get a lot of tech startup companies that are all located there, and people are travelling in on the train to go in to work in those places. And this, you'd have thought, would be, none of them would be there because they'd all be using video conferencing and other sort of things like Microsoft Teams or other types of technology. But they do spend a lot of time and money going in to physically meet face to face.
Yeah, and it is interesting, and there is an environmental perspective here as well, isn't there? Because, you know, especially if the people in a meeting are long distances apart, maybe there's even flights involved or something like that, then there's a cost, there's an environmental issue, there's the people's time in travelling. All of these sorts of things can be minimised. But I've had plenty of experiences where you have meetings where a considerable part of that meeting is getting the technology to work. Is someone's equipment that they're on compatible with what you're trying to use? And the last time I did that, there was a good half hour spent just getting the thing set up and getting everything working. And it certainly didn't feel... It was a mixed meeting. There were some people around the table and a few people on laptop screens. We even tried to project them onto a screen. But it almost felt like they weren't fully part of the meeting.
You can feel almost disembodied, can't you?
Yeah,
Are not taken. But then I've also been on meetings that everybody's on Zoom or Skype, and they can run really effectively, and you can meet people the other side of the world and different time zones, and you all work together and collaborate, and the cost is virtually minimal. So it does show that there is opportunities if everybody's working that way. But then there's something really richer to meet in person as well.
And I mean, actually, I think we can make a link here back to the knowledge and learning chapter, because a lot of the work on knowledge and learning, especially when it's about how do people share tacit knowledge, you know, this really rich knowledge that you get of something that you only really get from years and years of doing that particular task or that particular work. Yeah, let's say something like being a doctor or something like that. Well, how do doctors sort of develop their knowledge? It's not just from textbooks or whatever. They have conferences. But, you know, they go and talk about the work that they've done, the latest innovations and that sort of thing. And if you follow the theory, both Nanaka, who talked about knowledge transfer in organisations, Julian Orr is an example that's given, who looks at Xerox photocopier engineers and found the best way they learned was actually having lunch together in the same space and swapping their stories of what they'd done that way. So certainly there's a lot, if we're going from the knowledge and learning perspective, to be said of being in the same room and the same social environment as people.
And Conferences and places are another example where it's not often the formal presentation, it's bumping in somebody for coffee. And that's much harder to do on a technology side.
Because you flick
well.
The switch and the meeting's ended and that's it. You don't speak to each other afterwards.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, some really big issues of the workplace and how we communicate, and whether that's communicating with someone for a job interview or whether that's for sharing professional knowledge, we can see this technology brings a lot of upsides in terms of A, the efficiency, but even, you know, an environmental cost can be minimised by using it. But at the same time, we look at the sort of the nature of communication, and through things like social presence theory, we ask sort of what's sort of lost and what's gained through this.